This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to The Culture Bunker, your weekly pop culture roundup. He's Andrew Harrison.
And she's Sean Pattenden. This week we're delighted to be joined by the legend that is Claire Grogan of Altered Images, back with her stroke their first album in 39 years, and very, very good it is too. We're going to be talking to Claire about a life in pop and what it's like to find yourself back in focus four decades since Happy Birthday and I Could Be Happy.
Plus, it's an action movie doubleheader as we watch two high-concept brain exploders. Brad Pitt is a disaffected hitman trapped on a high-speed Japanese rail service with a ragbag of other killers in new action comedy Bullet Train. And remember the Predator from the Arnie movies? It's back and hunting Comanche tribespeople in the year 1719 in action prequel Prey. Has his horrible fangy mouth bitten off more than it can chew?
Plus, our guests will be choosing exciting new tunes for your delectation and also for our playlist. All this and more on today's Culture Bunker. Welcome to the show. Let's say hello to our first guest. Do we really need to introduce you to Claire Grogan? I Could Be Happy, Gregory's Girl, Happy Birthday, the combative Irish pop singer Niamh Connolly and Father Ted, Don't Talk to Me About Love. She's done the lot and now she's here in the Culture Bunker. Hello, Claire.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm alive.
Good. That's good. That's all we can ask these days, isn't it, really?
Really and truly, that's it. Yeah, I'm delighted that I'm still going.
You are about to release the first Altered Images album since 1983. How did you get back into that particular groove? Is it like riding a bike?
You know, I didn't set out to record a new Altered Images album at this point. I really didn't. It kind of happened to me. Just, I don't want to sound vague about it, but you know, in that second lockdown, I mean, I've been talking a lot about, quite a lot of us, I think, reevaluated where we were at with stuff.
Yes.
Around that time, because I basically got to pause because I'm always busy doing stuff, running around. And I did get to pause. And at first I struggled with it. And then I had to embrace it. Part of being relaxed, I found this little bit of space in my head to write songs again. And I live with Stephen Lerone, my husband. That's
in-house record producer, very handy to have.
A really amazing record producer, and he was in the original band. Now, I think you saw me when I kind of re-emerged after 18 years.
Well, the first time we met was at one of the sort of, the 80s revival tours in 2003.
Yeah.
And it was you and the Bell Stars and Steve Strange, RIP, and other such ledges.
Well, Kim Wilde and the Human League. So when I got asked to do that, I thought it was probably going to be a little bit of a one-off situation because I really thought, can I honestly do this at this point in my life? I really did think it would be a bit weird. And then my family kind of talked me into it because they just wanted to hang out backstage with Phil Oakey and Kim Wilde.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. So they were like, don't be so selfish. Of course you can sing Happy Birthday in your 40s, you know. So I did. And as you guys must all be really aware, the 80s revival has lasted longer than the decade.
Yes.
So that's when I kind of started again with Altered Images. But as I say, I just thought it was a one-off experience. But it hasn't been. It's just grown and grown and grown. And I don't know what that is. But I'm part of it.
Yeah.
And I thought during that lockdown, I'd love to write some new songs for all those people that still turn up at the shows. And I thought the best thank you I can do is have some new music. And then I just started writing with Stephen. We drank all the wine, ate all the crisps, watched all the box sets. So we thought, shall we do something else with our time? So we did.
Well, we're going to be talking about the album Mascara Streaked a little bit later. It is a boss record. It's full of vim and vigour and dancehall craziness. We love it. But Sean, who else is joining us?
He is an expert on Balearic beats. He is a bunker regular. He likes nice cufflinks and terrace style. He's DJ and journo Anthony Teasdale. Welcome back, Tony T.
All right, how are you getting on, kids?
We're good. The men's football is back this weekend.
Yes.
Is it going to have to go some to match the women's football of last weekend?
It really is. And I saw something on London's Twitter website the other day. And it was some fella outside a football match in the north of England pointing at some other fellas outside the same football match.
Yeah.
And I just thought, one, it's very aggressive. And I thought, it's July. It's July. You don't have to point to people in July. And to
interesting rule, but carry on, yeah.
And two, I just thought, when you've got all the positivity of what's going around the women's game at the moment, do we still, blokes still want to behave like this? Because
it's men in Stone Island shouting, who are you?
Yeah, it's just like, lads, you're granddads. You don't have to do this anymore. You can just go and have fun and watch the game and go and drink afterwards and have, but you don't have to point at people. You don't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not 1981. I'm not wearing Lois cords.
Although you know, would if you could.
Yeah, I would.
To be frank.
I have got shorts on today. So, yeah, I think it is going to have to do some, and I think it is a bit of an alternative football. And I really enjoyed the tournament. I'm looking forward to the new season. It feels a bit early. Mm. It feels a bit warm. Mm-hmm. You know, when the season was starting last week, the EPL, not the EPL, the EFL in July, which I have a big problem with, it does feel a bit early. I do need another 2 weeks, but right. I will go for it.
Who should have done the England women's team's official record, do you reckon?
Right.
And it can't be the Spice Girls.
King Tubby.
King Tubby for the women's football.
Interesting choice, King Tubby
with some old, lovely Jamaican singers of the 60s with their vocals in and out in a massive echoic style. So there wouldn't be a proper song. It would just be one relentless, boring bass line. Yeah.
Well, they could sample Silly Games. Get it?
Yeah, yes. You get Janet Kay to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, let's get Janet Kay. That's
she's
it.
She's in. All right, fantastic.
I'd say Self Esteem.
Oh, she's ace.
She'd be good.
She's good at an anthem.
Yeah,
she's great.
She's good at anthems.
She's so great.
Self Esteem for the English.
Yeah, right, that's it. Screw King Tommy. Self Esteem.
Before we move on, a short reminder, listeners, you can get the Culture Bunker and all of our shows early and without adverts when you support the Bunker on Patreon. That means our unbeatable menu of daily episodes on politics, science, pop culture, and much more with no ads. Just search Patreon Bunker Podcast to find out more. And if you want to help us out a little bit more, why not fill in our listener survey? The link is in the show notes. You could win one of 5 Bunker t-shirts and you'll be helping the podcast to get better. Why not do it right now while you're listening to this very podcast?
On guard. Let's start with the movies. Bullet Train stars Brad Pitt, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Sandra Bullock, Brian Tyree Henry and many more. It's directed by Deadpool 2's David Leitch. And forget Southwestern. This is the train journey from hell. With frenetic, almost 1990s stylization, light speed edits, flashbacks, voiceovers, plus blood, guts and candy-coated neon lighting, will Bullet Train be the smash, get it, hit of the summer? Let's listen to the trailer.
Talk to me.
I am ready. You are getting the new and improved me. Because if you put peace out in the world, you get peace back.
I think you might be forgetting what you do for a living. Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Hey, this is nice. Okay, what am I snatching and or grabbing?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
Doesn't get simpler.
Anthony Teasdale, I'm going to start with you. You trotted along to the big West End screening with us. Can you set this up? What is happening?
It's as you'd imagine, it's based on a bullet train. And there's a load of assassins get on this train, one of which is a fella called Ladybug.
And that's Brad Pitt.
And there is a suitcase full of money and loot, gold. And everyone is after this suitcase. And then, what happened is all these people start killing each other on the train. Do you know what I mean? So that's your setup.
Yes.
And what would I say? I would say that I certainly enjoyed the first hour and a half of this. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like, it's a bit of a mix between Tarantino, Guy Ritchie, some Japanese films. That's
also
sort of,
Agatha Christie. It's basically a bit of Agatha Christie trapped on a train.
Yeah, yes. So it's like that. And there are some really good little flashbacks, which I really enjoyed, of various assassins and their sort of backstories. Mm. There's some really sharp dialogue between, especially between, there's these two sort of lovable English assassins, both like quite cotton. They're very funny and they make some great jokes.
So one of whom is Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Yes. Yeah.
I really enjoyed that part of it. So it kept me in my seat for an mm-hmm. hour and a half. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know, this is good fun and it's quite sharp. And if you liked, say, Snatch, which I did, then I think you'd like that. However, mm-hmm. I would describe it as having a never-ending ending.
Yes.
It is an ending of the endings of all endings. Mm, it yes. is endings set in stone, 6 feet high, and it never ends. This is a film that needed to be an hour and a half long. If it had right. been, I would have gone, great, daft, funny, sharp, brilliant, loads of ultraviolence, loads of amusing characters, that's fine. But it does go on a bit and on and on. And in the end, and I motioned to Andrew at one stage and said, is X the bad guy after all? And I thought, oh, that would be quite good in a slightly clever twist way. No, that's it wasn't that at all. The bad guy is exactly who you thought the bad guy is.
Yeah.
And it just goes on too long. For me, I would say it's a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
If it was on, you'll go and enjoy it. But you could leave after about 90 minutes and had a perfectly acceptable right. experience.
Have you seen Deadpool 2?
No.
Fine.
Why?
Because I think there's something similar in that slightly sarcastic, ironic voiceover thing that penetrates this film and what makes it at some remove when you're watching it.
Well,
Andrew,
Deadpool's whole thing is he breaks the fourth wall, doesn't he, the whole
yes.
time? And this, it doesn't quite do that. But there are no sideways looks at the camera, but it's very much an inverted commas film. That said, I enjoyed it vastly. What's important about it is that it's actually very intricately plotted. It's not just a case of loading a load of murderers onto a train and watching them go at each other. Everybody's backstory is intimately intertwined with everybody else's backstory. And we start to see not just that there's a good old-fashioned quality caper on the go here, but also that there's something going on behind it. I love that dimension of the train movie, where each compartment is a scene in its own right and is a phase of the movie in its own right. And on the bullet train, we've got the luxury bar. We've also got the very neon manga one where all the school kids are on with the gigantic inflatable rabbit for some reason. The characters have to move in linear fashion. You know, you can't get past somebody. You've got to go to one end of the train or the other. Very much like Train to Busan was a fantastic zombie movie because it just placed a set of constraints around a set of characters and made them deal with it. And this, as Agatha Christie knew, a train is a great place to set a story. Because
and Hitchcock.
Exactly. You can force conflict and you can force people to encounter one another. I think Brad Pitt's brilliant. He's very funny. The conceit with him is that he's almost an assassin in recovery and he keeps trotting out all these platitudes about conflict as an opportunity for growth. And when you're pointing a finger at me, there's three fingers of accusation pointing back at you. All this self-help garbage, which doesn't stop him hitting you over the head with a pan if he needs to or shooting you. All the characters have great sort of comic potential, but also there's something quite real going on with them, I think, in that like it's a film about ultimately the ridiculousness of the notion that there's an assassin's underworld out there. Did you enjoy it, Sean?
I really enjoyed it. And, you know, after seeing things like Top Gun this year, I think there's a real place for this. Right, I want to be walloped over the head with a load of slapstick, comedy violence, people trying to get each other. And there's a simplicity in that and the fun of we're just going to throw everything at it. And that's why I like the ending, Tony, because it is 10 endings at once. And once you think it's done, then there's another one. They layer it on. And I just thought the delight in doing that. We can do this. We can make the most stupid ending anyone's ever made. I actually really quite enjoyed that. Now, as we know, I went with my 17-year-old son, who was very keen to see this. Gave it a 9 out of 10. He was, and he liked the Brad Pitt, you know, fatalism versus determinism
Yes.
Sort of his faux hippie self.
What I liked about it as well was it kind of brings together the crash bang wallop stupidity of a good comedy action movie with that vaguely Japanese sensibility that, like, great forces are at play here, and among them is fate, but also honour and, you know, sense of self and truth and redemption.
I mean, it's a cartoon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically, we watched a cartoon, but with...
But it's a cartoon made by people who genuinely love the cartooniness of it, and it's a film in its own stupid way with quite a lot of heart. It's committed to its own stupidity, which I found very admirable. I mean, the cast of characters is great. It really is. You know, we've got a Mexican gang killer, mysterious female assassin.
Yeah.
We've got a young woman who appears to be a victim of circumstance. Strange things happen to her along the way. You've got the twin assassins. You've got the big bad who's off screen. I mean, none of this is going to hit Cahiers du Cinéma, is it?
No, but it's not characters of storytelling. You've got a wise man, you've got, you know, people who come along the lines, you know, an archetypal villain, all those things. Claire, is this something you would go and see?
Well, you're selling it to me,
Quite good.
And as a genre, it's not something that I'm immediately drawn to. But I did watch the other week The Grey Man. On Netflix with my daughter Ellie. And actually, I really enjoyed that so much more than I expected to. So, yeah, actually, I think I actually really love Brad Pitt as well. I think he's a fantastic comedy actor. I really do.
I think he's kind of grown into the age he is now in this, because the character he's playing here is a bit battered and weary. He doesn't really enjoy being an assassin. He's trying to get out of it. Brad Pitt remains an exceptionally good-looking guy, but he's a kind of a weathered good-looking guy now. Yeah. And I think it suits him.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think he's, as you say, he's really grown into himself. Mm. But I do wonder, and I could be completely off the mark with this, because I'm not educated enough about this, but even when I was watching The Grey Man, I thought, I wonder if Killing Eve has influenced quite a lot of films. You know, just that, the kind of comedy and the ultra violence. Yeah. But I don't know what came first. So
I think Killing Eve is a big motive force in these things, in that there are no pure comedies anymore. They're an action comedy, or they're a horror comedy, or they're a fully scripted comedy with an arc. You know, we don't really just have standalone comedies anymore, but neither do we have just pure action films anymore. They have to have something to say, even if the only thing they're commenting on is the idea of the action movie. And this is kind of both a satire of an action movie and a really great celebration of an action movie.
Yeah, it's similar to In Bruges, Martin McDonagh.
It's
less intellectual maybe than that, but again, it's the weary assassin, what do we do? It's actually quite boring, we're just waiting around. There's something about that element in it that I really like. I just thought, you know, it's dumb in a good way. You know, we just want to go and see something dumb.
Yeah.
I thought, this is exactly what I want to see.
But it's high quality stupidity, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Brad Pitt, I mean, I could watch Brad Pitt in most films.
We haven't even mentioned the snake.
Oh, the snake. I don't know if the ends were tied, so to speak, with the snake. Because they've done more with the snake. There's a snake on the train.
Snakes on a train. There you go. See, that's the high concept. Snakes on a train. Yeah. It's the sequel to Snakes on a Plane.
I would very much recommend this.
I recommend it enormously.
That was really good fun.
I'm going to go and see it.
Yay! So we've sold a ticket. Every week we ask our guests to bring in a current favourite tune of theirs as a service to you, the listener. Anthony Teasdale, what have you brought for us?
Surprisingly, I've bought Balearic Record.
Departure.
Well, you know, I like to surprise people, kids. It's a fella called Pete Herbert. And Pete does this thing called Music for Swimming Pools. Now, these aren't the sort of swimming pools that we all grew up in and did our
municipal
baths.
The
baths, you've got your patch for 10, you know. And there's no way does he sort of find a brick on the bottom of the...
Doesn't have to walk through the verandah.
There's none of that. However, he does all these very pleasant Balearic chuggy disco records that I do like. The latest one is the Far Flung EP, and it's, I would describe it as sumptuous summer music. And it's great value EP, it's on Spotify, but there's a really great gold sweet restring of it, which is just really lovely, and the sort of record that you would want on if you're at Hostel de la Torre in Ibiza, watching the sun go down and thinking all is right in the world. So I'm saying give it a go.
Well, let's have a listen to a bit of it. This is Pete Herbert with Far Flung, open brackets, gold sweet, restring, close brackets. It's going on the playlist. Here's a bit of it, and I'm going to go and pretend I'm sitting on a beach. We'll be right back.
And we welcome once more Altered Images firebrand, my teen hero, Claire Grogan. Musician, actor, children's author, presenter and DJ, Ms. Grogan has managed to stay both productive and totally relevant since her entry into the pop world while she was still a teenager. So good to have you here, Claire.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for such a nice introduction.
I could have frothed on for a lot longer. So what took you...
So we've got that bitch Grogan with us today. It's what I was half expecting.
We discussed in the intro, really, what took you 39 years. And you were doing other things between doing this album. It's called Mascara Streaks, your album, which is the punkiest title of 2022, I think.
Oh.
Where does it come from?
Well, it comes from the notion that, well, one, I've always got smudged mascara, so it's a very personal kind of like go at myself. But I can't go, when I started thinking about making the, you know, collection of songs, I couldn't stop thinking about last night a DJ saved my life and the power of music, because I really, really have such a big emotional connection to certain songs. And I really believe that they did have saved me sometimes. Mm. I really do. And I just love the idea of, you know, when you start on a big night out, it's kind of like, I've decided it's a bit of a metaphor for life. I really genuinely do. And you can agree with me or disagree with me. But for me, it's about the sort of anticipation, the preparation, the drama, the falling out, falling in love, everyone getting back together. It's got a storyline every night out, you know, and I love a big night out and still do. Mm. And the idea of waking up in the morning with mascara streaks, thinking, what happened? Was it good or wasn't it? And I just think that there's a real joy to that. And I think that, you know, particularly now when we're coming out of this, I know we're out of lockdown for a while now, but I just love the idea of the fact that the thing that I missed was this collective energy of being in a room with people playing to music and dancing. And I'm not a big dancing queen. I love to dance. But I thought I suddenly really missed the just being with people. I mean, I know everyone, well, not everyone did actually, but I just loved the idea of this, you know, last night a DJ saved my life vibe.
Absolutely. Much of this album is about dancing, it seems. Before we chat further, let's have a listen. On the podcast and the playlist, here's Glitterball. So I heard that you went back before or while writing this album and you listened to Simple Minds, Human League, Tom Tom Club and all sorts of early music, late 70s, early 80s stuff to get you in the spirit. Is that right?
Yes, very much so. And I was at home with my husband and my daughter for lockdown and my Ellie was 16, she's now 17. And I just really started thinking about myself as a 16-year-old and what I was doing at that age. And I was pretty much in the back of a transit van running around the country with Altered Images. Mm. And I started thinking about... Also, if I'm being honest, Sean, throughout that, I had to kind of really to give my daughter quite a lot of, you know, pep talks and self-motivation and life coaching. And I suddenly thought, I need to heed some of this advice. So I really decided I wanted to find the energy and the boldness I had as a 17-year-old and recreate it. I'm not interested in going back. Mm. This is very much about who I am now and rediscovering that thing in me that made me want to be that bold and loud and just wanting to enjoy music, you know, in my own terms. And I've been doing that for a long time. And then, of course, I got Bernard Butler drafted in, my neighbour.
Glitterball, we've just played, is written by a friend of the show, Bernard Butler. So he was utilising that energy as well. And you're both going, oh, look, it feels like we're 15 and 16 now.
Not quite. He's a bit, lot more laid back than I am. I'm always the most excited person in any room, unless you're with Mark Ellen, I suppose. But
he's quite excitable.
He really is, isn't he? Yeah. But
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I just wanted to have fun with it more than anything. But for me, it had to have this very, it's an incredibly personal record, this. It's the most personal thing I've ever done.
Right,
because
yeah.
I expose quite a lot of myself in it. And it's not all good. But that's where I think it's about being a survivor. Really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, well, there's a line, yeah. isn't there, that I've written down on one of my notes about surviving, which is from Colour of My Dreams. The greatest thing I know is I know how to survive. Mm-hmm. So the great Gloria Gaynor is being used here as well, but that is your own story too.
Yeah, I mean, I've had quite a few knocks along the way. My life is not quite a lot. Sometimes people say to me, why are you always so happy? And I'm like, well, because I know what real pain is. And if I can get through that pain, I'm always going to come back to my happy place. And that is the truth of it. And I think that always, even in my early songwriting days, things like I Could Be Happy, I loved always having a slightly dark edge to really upbeat tune. And that's a theme with this as well. I mean, I don't want to sound too heavy about it, but I think the whole thing about life is you've got to utilise everything you've experienced. And for me, I had to turn that into a very positive thing. And I think with this, I can't go over. I've got an album out. I really can. It's just overwhelming.
So how many of you are in the band now?
I've been performing live shows for a very long time now, and I have a rota of really fabulous musicians that are all Glasgow based. There's about 10 of them, and the reason why I've got this little, you know, cooperative of musicians is they're busy, they're in other bands, they're doing other things, so I just rotate them all the time. But in, for the record, because it was this lockdown scenario, I wrote it with my husband Stephen Bernard and my really good friend Robert Hodgins, better known as Bobby Bluebell to some. So I wrote a couple of tracks with Robert, a couple of tracks with Bernard, and the rest was with Stephen. And it was just circumstances that created that kind of little group of us round my house, or round at Bernard's house, or round at Robert's house.
And what's it like working with the husband? Who bosses whom around?
Well, you know, it's the only thing we don't argue about, really. It's quite incredible because, you know, the first song I ever wrote with Stephen was Don't Talk to Me About Love.
Okay.
With Johnny McElhone as well. And if he'd told me then that I'd end up married to him and writing an album with songs with him 40 years on or whatever, 100 years on, I would never, ever have believed it. But yeah, no, we work, we have a bit of a shorthand, you know, because although I haven't written songs for Altered Images for a while, although I did for one of their greatest hits albums, I've written other songs with Stephen for, we wrote some songs for Skins. And,
that's right.
And
yeah,
I've done some songwriting for American Soap Stars with them and all the rest of it. Yeah, so I've always done it, but not on this kind of level for a very long time.
Yeah, but it's okay then. It's no one's storming out of the vocal booth.
Well, you know, I'm so used to him. You know, when I did say to him, you know, Robert and Bernard are a bit nicer to me than you. Because he's just, literally, he'd just go, do it again. Do it again. Do it again. They would at least say please.
Yeah. And thank you after a take. Yeah. Altered Images was an HR success. So former members formed Texas, One Dove, probably many, many more, but there are many more. You're still here. Is it good to know how much influence Altered Images had sort of within there to go on and do things, but also in the wider world and people that do cite you as an influence?
Yeah, it's quite overwhelming sometimes. It really is. And I know it sounds crazy, but I tend not to overanalyze it, although people ask me to analyze it all the time. And for me, I prefer to not think about it too much because it's like I'm having some kind of out-of-body experience. I'm just very much about where I'm at the moment and what I'm doing. And, you know, I absolutely love it, though, whenever I can go anywhere in the world and someone will say, I really love, you know, Don't Touch Me About Love, or See Those Eyes, or and I Could Be Happy, Happy Birthday. I mean, that's a really magical thing to have in life.
or dead pop stars, for that matter.
Yes.
You want the other end of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. People love dead pop stars. It's in my live set, and it always goes down an absolute storm, except with my daughter Ellie, who's like, it's really embarrassing when you do that.
I was going to ask, what does she think of the record?
She sings in it.
Oh, right. Oh, great. What's she on?
Red Startles the Sky, yeah. Mascara Streaks, because well, we were kind of stuck at home together and every so often we did quite a lot of writing in the kitchen. Then we'd go up to Stephen's studio and his studio is next door to her bedroom. So quite often she would come storming through and ask us to turn it all down. It's pure Safi, you know, and absolutely fabulous. But she's got a great voice. And I said to her, I don't want us to sound like the Partridge Family because believe me, we're really not. But I thought this is something that will probably never happen again. I want you to be on it.
In 2012, Gary Kemp admitted that you're the inspiration for True by Spandau Ballet. Yeah. How did that feel? And it all coming out as well?
It's very weird. I think it's Gary's story. And, you know, obviously it's so lovely that anyone would write a song about me at all. But Gary is my friend and it, you know, people love that song. Mm. I feel like I'm the bit of the disappointment attached to it.
Oh, no. No, it makes the song even more.
I should put him in the friend zone.
I don't know. He could at least have given you points.
Yeah.
That would have been handy.
For being that kind of inspiring person. Come on. Inspiration.
No song without me.
And you mentioned self-esteem earlier. You listen to lots of new music and you really like her. What do you like about self-esteem?
I like the messaging. I think that's... I think that was missing in pop music for a while, and I think that's changed again. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I'm just listening to a lot more music because of my daughter, and you know, because I go through phases where I'm an absolute music nut, and then I just don't have time for it. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds weird, but when you're a real fan, it's obsessive.
Yeah,
it just is. And if I can't be obsessive about it, I have to let it go a bit. But with self-esteem, I literally was. In my car, driving over to my niece's house, Hayley's, and I had the first time I heard, I do this all the time, I honestly had to pull the car over so I could listen to it properly. Mm. And I think when music affects you like that, then there's someone is doing something absolutely right.
I had to listen to that record the first time I heard it all afternoon and all evening of that day. I had it on repeat because there was something about it there. So I very much agree with you there. Lastly, I'm going to Glasgow for the weekend, seeing my mates and stuff. What would you recommend? And I'm going tomorrow morning.
Are you going tomorrow morning?
Yeah, I'm going tomorrow morning.
Well, there's a pop festival
happening. I know, I'm going to some of that.
Yeah. I'm going to be in Glasgow.
Are you?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Here we go. Big Night Out.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Album 2 written on Big Night Out.
I'm going up to rehearse, actually, because I'm playing Rebellion.
Yeah. Brilliant.
In Blackpool.
Oh, I'm around till Monday if you want to, you know.
So, I mean, Glasgow is such a fun city, and obviously I'm super biased about it.
Yeah.
But there's just, you know, when Ellie was a wee girl and we'd be in Glasgow, she'd say to me all the time, does everyone in Glasgow know each other? And I'm like, no, they're just really friendly. So, I mean, you will not be stuck for new friends. There's so much going on in Glasgow all the time. I love it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, yes, I will be going and savouring every moment. I want to say thank you so much, Claire Grogan. It has been so lovely to speak to you. And Mascara Streaks is out end of August.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Sean is totally fangirling here.
I know.
I'm appreciating it.
Jolly good.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Finally, a bit more action for you. Out right now, this very day on Disney+, Prey is a prequel to the 80s bloodfest Predator. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I Ain't Got Time to Bleed, you remember all that. It's a very pre-prequel set in 1719 on the American Great Plains, where the white man is only just pushing into Comanche lands, and the technologically advanced alien Predator has just arrived to carry out its own rite of passage, i.e. killing and skinning anything it can lay its hands on. Starring the magnetic Amber Midthunder as female warrior Naru, who's keen to prove herself as a skilled hunter, Prey features a core cast of Native American actors, and it asks the question, if Arnie and a platoon of 80s Marines had a hard time killing this thing, how are you going to do it with hatchets and bows and arrows? Here is a taster.
It knows how to hunt. I know how to survive.
Predator's decision is final. Sean, this is an action movie with a very different setting from usual. The first Predator movie basically relitigated Vietnam with the space monster. you are coming to the Predator completely fresh. What did you make of this?
I thought it was incredibly Disney. I don't think it's a surprise it's on Disney, because it's about a princess who has to prove herself and go on a hunt. And she has to prove that she has masculine energy as much as she has feminine energy. And she goes through that. The fact then there's this predator and he's half invisible and he's half not and he's 8 foot tall and there's something else makes it interesting. But I thought it was quite traditional.
Yeah.
And I thought they'd been very clever in this is really going to appeal to young girls. I don't see there's any point that, you know, from nine upwards that you couldn't really, really enjoy this film.
It's interesting you should say Disney, because it is brutal and blood-soaked with chopped off limbs, exploding heads. And did we watch the same? Did you watch Mulan
after
by mistake?
After Bullet Train, I'm used to the gore.
But
I think.
I mean, it doesn't stint on that. The arc of Amber Midthunder's character is, to me, the most compelling thing about it. She's like, it's a completely different society from the one that we're used to seeing action movies transpire in. And it's not exactly clear from this film, but the thing with the Predator is, the young predators go to alien planets to prove themselves. They carry out their first big hunt. And that's exactly what she has to do.
It's almost her walkabout, isn't it?
It's almost her walkabout.
Yeah, no, it's this, you know, she's, if she doesn't die from everything, you know, that's the way that she, that proves she exists, that proves she, you know, can do these things. And in that, I really, really liked it. But I say it's not really my genre normally.
I mean, the original movies were incredibly macho. It's like loads of guys with machine guns and Arnie doing one-liners, you know, stabbing people and seeing stick around, all this kind of thing. This is modern gender politics in an action context.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know that it goes much further in that. At points, she is the main character and she's incredibly solitary as a character. It is about her internal working. So you're not, apart from her, a monster and a few other people she meets on the way, I'm not sure that it goes into depth about, you know, any more than that.
I mean, there are two versions of this going out. One's in the Comanche language. It's, as I say, it's a heavily Native American First Nation cast. There are cultural and history advisors on this. Insofar as I'm able to understand it, it seemed to be incredibly respectful to the society on which they're visiting this alien monster. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and I thought that that was wonderful. And you can really tell that they've done their research and this is properly done and the right experts are on it. And this is a good, it's the 180 degree inversion that we need. A lot of these stories are told from the side we always hear from. And you're talking about those early Predator movies are about that. We need it heard from what usually should, you know, are the baddies. It just inverts that. And I think in that sense, it's really great.
Tony T, how about you? You haven't seen the original Predators either, have you?
No. I'm not a massive sort of fan of the action movie.
Yeah.
But I do like this, and it's for a particular reason. I like any film where there's pre-industrial people and spaceships.
Yes.
So there's nothing more satisfying than like a medieval peasant ploughing the land and then getting wasted by a laser beam. So I like anything like that.
But this is a thoughtful version of that, because the aliens, in the very early scenes, the alien spaceship appears and she says to her brother, I've seen the Thunderbird, the creature from, you know, American myth. It's an omen. It's showing me something. And in a sense, it actually genuinely is.
You know, if you're talking about UFOs, well, I always found it very interesting. A UFO would be an unidentified flying object, but actually what people do straight away is they identify it as, say, a flying saucer. Because those things that turn up that we can't explain, we try and get an explanation for them. So in this, they liken it to a folk tale, because they can't conceptualize it. But I genuinely enjoyed it, and I liked her. And I like the fact that she was hanging around with a load of douchebags, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So they were like Comanche idiots.
Yeah, and a really nice way that it's scripted is that we don't get any kind of cod sort of Western dialogue. There's no kind of big threat in big jungle. They speak in a kind of, in a neutral idiom. The accents are American accents because that is a neutral accent for, for this audience. There's no kind of pantomiming of the Native American characters. It's like they just happen to be people who live in that society. The thing that I really liked about it was that in previous Predator movies, it's essentially loud blokes being punished for their arrogance. People who think that they pack modern day American military ordnance and that's going to, you know, this means that they will always win out. The people that we're talking about here, the humans we're talking about here, they're not tourists in the place that they've, they hunt to live. So there's no kind of, I've blundered into a place where I don't belong. This is like, they know this landscape. They know what has to be done in order to survive. And it's the predator itself, which is the tourist. It's basically a gap year trophy hunter. Like those horrible dentists we see have shot a lion, you know, and that puts a completely different cast around the whole thing. You know, you're not looking at a satire of a military power. You're looking at a kind of a lost world.
Yeah, they've sent him down. He's turned up to cause a load of havoc. But also there's a third element, which is the bad guys are French.
Well, the French trappers, because French, it's happening at the moment when the old world is about to colonise the new world. A large part of the second act involves French trappers turning up, capturing many members of the Native American cast. And there's a horrific scene of dead buffalo, which turns out to be not exactly what you thought. And, you know, in a sense, it's like we've got two strands of who's the bad guy here.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, maybe it'd be good to hear from the Predator. You know, why he was there, you know.
That's a bit woke for me.
Have I gone too woke? Hey, come on, guys. Yeah. But it's incredibly enjoyable. I like the way it looked as well.
Yeah, it looks beautiful,
it's really beautiful. Yeah. And it's a sensational bit of telly, and I would heartily recommend it.
I thought it was fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Amber Mid-Thunder. She was great in a series called Legion, which is one of the less known Marvel series, but is just probably the best of the Marvel TV series because it's so psychologically intense and interesting. And she plays a wonderful character in that who is, she's defined purely by violence. She wants to just, she runs around and says, is it time for me to punch somebody now? I need to punch somebody. I think she's got fantastic potential as a proper female action hero. She herself is Native American. She's Mexican Native American. There are great callbacks to the original Predators in this film. You know, if it bleeds, we can kill it. But it's not a kind of a self-congratulatory look at our clever action movie thing. There are no sort of, there are no zingers. There's no, I mean, much as I love the get away from here, you bitch moment in Aliens, there are no sort of unearned moments of look how clever we are in this film. I always thought that the Predator as a monster never got a decent movie.
Okay.
You know, he's very much the D-list.
Never
you
got
know,
the props,
the
right?
Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien, is an absolute classic for the ages because it represents so many things. It's, you know, body horror, the terror of birth. Is it mindless or is it incredibly intelligent? Mm. That whole life cycle of laying the eggs, all this kind of stuff, there's so much going on. And the first one with Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, which in a way is not dissimilar from this, is like the woman constantly let down by every man around and finally has to solve it herself. But I don't think there's ever been a really great Predator movie, and this is a great Predator movie because, you know, you've got, you know, what is it to be a hunter? Mirrored in the two casts. You've got what actually drives this society. And there's two great bits of nuance towards the end, and this is not a spoiler, but I think it's worth looking out for. The final title sequence, which is drawn in the style of Native American folk art, reprises the film with stick figures, basically. Yes. As often happens in contemporary movies, you'll see the film, like a little coda to the film read on. But there's an implication in this, very, very lightly implied, that the reason the Predators don't come back for another 300 years is because of this. And they're not going to come back until the weapons might be better, but the people won't be. The people will be weaker than her. And I thought that was, for little subtle things, but I thought that was amazing. This will not be a surprise. This is not a spoiler. After events are resolved, there's a strong implication that something much bigger than the Predator is coming for this Comanche tribe. Mm-hmm. And it is bigger than the Predator, and it can't be fought, and it will overwhelm them. And it's us. It's we are the people watching this film, people watching this in living rooms across America and across the Western world. You know, it's incredibly poignant because you've just seen what we love to see, which is, you know, conflict played out in a fantasy context. But the film is clever enough to stay in dialogue with the real world and say that whatever they've achieved, ultimately, it is going to be in vain. And I found that really moving, actually. And what a big splattery horror action movie can get you. I think that's an excellent piece of work. And it's on right now. It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And directed by a guy whose only previous movie is 10 Cloverfield Lane and a couple of episodes of The Boys, a guy called Dan Trachtenberg.
Well, that's very impressive.
Amazing.
So
yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Right, now it's the turn of you, Claire, to bring in a tune for our listeners.
Yes.
What have you brought in today?
Well, I have brought this is a label in Glasgow, and actually they've got, you were talking about going to Glasgow, and I would go and check this shop out. It's called Last Night from Glasgow, and it's a shop and a label that sells all it. And it's a really cool label. I mean, I don't know an awful lot about it, but the number of times people that I mix with say, have you heard this? It's on Last Night from Glasgow.
Okay.
It was Bobby Bluebell that introduced me to Sister Joan, who are a band in Glasgow, and the Bluebells actually collaborate with them from time to time, and they do quite a lot of shows together. I really love this one, I'll Be Your Life by Sister Joan.
Fantastic. You can hear the full thing on the playlist, but here's a bit of I'll Be Your Life.
I'll be your life, I'll do the calculation, and I'll make sure they know you prefer cremation. I'll be you. You're not the first, it's happened to. I'll do it better, I'll sign my name on the letter to your wife. I'll be alive, I'll give fingertips, I'll tell you how it tastes when I roll on my lips. I'll be right.
Finally, regular listeners know we also ask our guests to bring in their favourite songs of all time to add on the playlist. Claire Grogan, what is the best tune of all time?
Well, this is just the toughest question out, and I absolutely hate it when people ask me.
That's why we ask you.
Oh, yes.
But it always comes back to the same song for me, and that's Hong Kong Garden, Susie and the Banshees.
Ah.
I was a massive Susie fan. And when I first heard this record, I think it was 1978, I found what worked for me in music. You know, because a lot of my taste was based a little bit on my, well, quite a lot of my big sister's taste. Mm. And suddenly I discovered Susie Sue and I went, she is my kind of girl. And I literally carried a copy of it, the single, around in my handbag for years, just in case I came across someone who'd never heard it. And I'd be like,
that's great.
You haven't heard it? Have you got a record player? Here you are. And, you know, then Altered Images got to support Susie on her Scottish leg of her tour when we first started out, because we got in touch with the fan club manager, Billy Chainsaw, and said, we see Susie and the Banshees are coming to Scotland. Do they need an opening act? Because we'd be happy to do it. And they said yes.
Wow. Have you still got an emergency copy of Hong Kong Garden in your bag?
No, I've got it on my phone.
Of course you have.
Excellent.
Well, the good news is we've all got it on our phone now because of technology. We'll stick that on the playlist. Tony Teasdale, what have you chosen?
I think this is about the fifth time I've been asked my favourite tune of all time. So I'm going to keep saying the same one because that'd be weird.
Mm.
So I sort of looked at my Spotify playlist and what I play mostly. Mm. And I do play a lot of late mid-70s AOR, which is weird because I was four.
Yes.
But it reminds me very much of my parents and what was going on Radio 2 and that sort of thing. And it's so this time it's Nobody Does It Better by Carly Simon.
Absolute banger.
Oh, it's a banger, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous song.
Boss, isn't it, that?
It's a Bond banger. Yes.
You got a really big reaction to that. I got less so for Hong Kong Garden.
Too more respectful.
And Hong Kong Garden got, and Nobody Does It Better got,
It's just, there's this string crescendo at the end. It's absolutely fantastic. Lyrics, I wasn't looking, but somehow you found me.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, and they also get in, was it like Heaven Above Me, The Spy Who Loved Me? So
they got the title.
They got it in, and it's just absolutely fantastic. And get on it now.
Yeah.
You appreciate like a piece of great art it is.
Yeah.
It'll be straight on the playlist.
Yes.
Link is, as you know, the links are in the show notes and it's on Tidal as well. So you can listen on Spotify or Tidal.
And with that, we're at the end of the podcast and it's closing time chatter. What will we be discussing as we get our sequins on, neck a can of hard seltzer and hit the dance floor? This is exactly what we did last week. Claire, what's your closing time chatter?
I can't wait for the point that age is something that we don't have to talk about in relation to music and all things cultural to a certain extent, because I've been doing quite a lot of press recently for my new album and the response has been amazing, and it really has. But there's just always a slight, not everyone, but some people just creeping in with that kind of slight attitude of, do you think this is appropriate at your age? It just honestly, it makes me laugh. And I just can't wait for that not to be part of the conversation. But, you know, interestingly, at the top of this show, I talked about being 40s, in my 40s when I started doing Happy Birthday again and thinking, is this right? So I'm slightly guilty of it as well. But, it, you know, Sian, I just, what I say to people a lot is, I'm not trying to deny my age. Why would I? I really amn't. But I'd rather be viewed as a person and an artist. An artist, should I really call myself an artist? But as a person and not an age.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I can't wait for that to just not be a thing.
Well, I've been being asked, haven't you gotten out of pop music yet since I was about 19? So it's just people keep saying it, don't they? And in the end, we're told at all times, stay in touch with your inner child.
Yep.
And then when you do, people go, haven't you grown out of that yet?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I think that's getting less and less because I associate pop music not really with youth anymore.
Yeah.
They're not interested.
They don't care. Like, you know, so they're not bothered. So it's, you know, it's, for me, if you look at the Stones, it's just a, mostly can be a job for life.
So you go around saying to young people, haven't you grown into that yet?
Yeah, have you got that? Am I not still? No.
It's about following your passion, everybody.
Yeah.
Tony T, what's your closing time chatter?
Predictably, and really predictably, I was listening to Radio 5 the other day and there was a great conversation between journalist Jim White and Phil McNulty, and they've written a book about Liverpool and Man United and the relationship between those two football teams.
Yeah.
Probably, and it's a bit of a bigger thing that looks at the relationship between the two cities as well, and the great similarities, very similar to another brilliant city, Glasgow. I would put all three of those together as fantastic, brilliant, amazing British cities. And it's a really interesting history about why Liverpool and Man United dislike each other so much and when it began. So there's a lot of what they call back history with this. So back history is when we suit the history to suit the present.
Mm.
But actually, if you look, it only really started in the early 70s.
The rivalry.
Yeah.
Really?
It's you know, there's talk about, well, it's when the Manx built the ship canal to avoid paying our obviously very generous tariffs.
Poor tariffs, yes.
Yes, great guys we were. and it's just really fascinating because actually it's a modern day phenomenon. Mm. It's based around football. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about it is the clubs don't really do business together. It's only the last player was in the late 60s.
Yes.
They don't particularly get on with each other at a board level.
Mm.
And I think it's quite, I mean, obviously it's interesting to me because I'm very passionate about the Northwest. I love the Northwest. But I'd be interested in what people who aren't from our area think of those two cities and clubs.
What's the book called?
Red on Red.
There you go. Well, this is, you know, Sherlock Holmes is nothing without Moriarty. Doctor Who is nothing without the Master.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, these clubs are nothing without each other. Let's not forget Everton.
What's your closing time chatter, Andrew Harrison?
Well, mine is the astonishing canning of this $70 million Batgirl movie shot in Glasgow because it makes more sense as a tax loss than it does putting it out. I can't believe it was that bad that it couldn't be put out at all. The directors, Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fallah, did a very good job on Ms. Marvel. These are exciting young talents. I can't believe they made a film so terrible. I mean, look at some of the rubbish that Warners have put out under the DC banner. Genuinely, shockingly bad films. So the idea that it actually has more value as a tax write-off than what could be brought back just even from putting it straight to streaming or whatever. Apparently DC, the DC division of Warner, is now restructuring to be more like Marvel and have a plan like Marvel has. And it's like, now you realise, 12, 14 years down the line, now you know. I don't think they'll ever get it right because, as friend of the podcast Ian Dunn said on Twitter, Marvel superhero movies are made by people who love comics, and DC are not made by people who love comics. They don't even seem to love movies very much. But the idea that a £70 million movie can never be seen astounds me.
But Andrew, do you not think this announcement has just made absolutely everyone want to see it.
Yes.
Well, it's yes.
So they might reverse the decision.
Apparently, it's a reversal. Apparently, this is not a joke or a marketing technique. This is not. We're going to close down Six Music. Yeah. Cough, cough. Yeah. No, we're not. So we're splitting up. Cough, cough. It's the real deal. They're not putting out, and it amazes me.
Mm. It just can't be that bad. I mean, or. If it, I mean, how can you go? Well, I've always thought, because I make quite a lot of low budget movies, mm-hmm. and I've always thought, you know, having a huge budget mm-hmm. is not a guarantee mm-hmm. of anything. Yeah. In mm-hmm. fact, it can get really in the way of creativity.
Films can be that bad. If you've ever seen Battleship with Rihanna, you'll know films can be that bad.
Not seen that.
Sean, what's your closing time, Shadow?
Well, it's, I mean, the overview is that work of art is never finished. And we do talk about creativity and how people do it and what happens and the whole process on this podcast quite a lot. But it's Beyoncé taking out the Khalees sample on her record because she hadn't asked Khalees whether she could sample a bit of Milkshake, that Khalees is not credited with writing, but then Khalees has a problem with that because that's the Neptunes and they took all the money from it, and how complicated these things are, how unfair the system still feels for creators and their work being used. But also how you can release an album one week and then you release the different version on streaming the next week, and then maybe it will change. Lizzo had to do it as well.
Well, so did Beyoncé had to take out the unpleasant, disablest slur.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was absolutely incredible that Beyoncé's team hadn't picked up on that.
You would have thought.
But that just goes to show how closed in people become and just about themselves.
But absolutely,
I recognise it.
Yeah.
I don't think it was actually a legal thing, was it? I think it was Khalees had kicked off about it, and it was more about the look
vocally,
than the
yes, publicly. I'm Team Khalees really on that front. I mean, you do the common courtesy, don't you, at least, even if the royalties are going to be a bit spiky and a bit confusing. But yeah, I think it's endlessly fascinating that you can change product, you can change art, and these things are never clear cut. There's always a legal team.
But then you end up with George Lucas ruining Star Wars. Put it out and leave it never changed. That's what I say.
Well, fair enough.
And on that note, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much to the mighty Claire Grogan for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely. I love a chat.
My mascara streaks us out at the end of the month, yes?
Yeah, 26th of August.
26th of August.
And I'm going to be doing a show in Rough Trade East on that night. You know,
all right.
We're going to do a live.
That is fabulous. Yeah,
it's the place
record.
To be. It is a great,
really,
great record.
Really enjoy it.
Thank you.
And also, thanks for joining us to the ever-relaxed Tony Teasdale.
Am I relaxed?
You are very relaxed, very laid back. Listeners, remember you can get all the tunes on our rolling playlist. Links are at the top of the show notes. From me and Sean, from producers Alex Rees, Jelena Safinovic and Jade Bailey, thank you for listening, and we're going to see you next week.
Bye.
The Culture Bunker was produced and presented by Andrew Harrison and Sean Pattenden. The producers were Jelena Safinovic and me, Alex Rees. Theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.